been a great while, but not during the pandemic so much.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 17th, and this is our Amex Technical Advisory Committee. Call to order. Mr. Baker, do we have a quorum?
We do.
All right. We do have a quorum. We can move on. Moving on to item 2A, meeting minutes from the January 20th, 2022 meeting. Reference attachment 2A. Chip Holland, vote to approve.
Chair Rittman, second.
Excellent. We have a motion to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. The motion is approved. Moving on to staff reports. Agenda item 3A, financial progress report. Reference attachment 3A. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see, through February, we've expended about 52% of the budget. We're in good shape moving forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? All right. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Kovacic to move to approve.
Tomasi. Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. None. The motion passes. Moving on to technical progress report, item 3B. Mr. Baker.
All right. Thank you very much. Technical progress, just a couple of notes for all of you in the room, is that, as many of you know, there are RAISE grants. That application is due April 14th. If you do need letters of support from us, please let us know. We are currently getting some requests and trying to provide those as quickly as we can for your application process. Also, some of you may have seen the $1.5 trillion omnibus that was passed last week. It included what I believe was roughly $840 million worth of earmarks. Earmarks are back. I think it's important for all of us to be aware of that. Ohio didn't do particularly well when you look at the earmarks and what was out there. I believe Akron did get one for Lock 3, or actually not even the city, but Ohio and Erie Canal Coalition got one for the Lock 3 park. But otherwise, I don't think there was much in our region. That being said, when we talk about funding opportunities and we think about projects that you might be interested, keep in mind that those appear to be another viable option for funding as we move forward. Otherwise, you'll see our safety report today, a few other things as we continue to move towards our long-range planning for 2050. And if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Seeing none, we will move on to item 3C, Amex Federal Fund Report. Mr. Collette.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to get back up on my soapbox and talk about a grave concern I have, and that is the number of projects left to sell in fiscal year 22. There's still around 26 projects left. And now there may be some that are sold, and it might have just happened and we're not aware of it, but there's around 26 projects left to sell in this fiscal year. And the thing you have to keep in mind is we're almost at the end of the third quarter, and the fourth quarter is actually only 2 months long because not too much happens on the ODOT side during June, toward that last month. So if there's any issues you might have with your projects that you have scheduled to sell, please let us know. If we can help you in any way, we'd be glad to. Couple other things I wanted to mention. Between the CMAC funding and the STBT, CMAC, and TASA funding and resurfacing, we have 44 new projects in the pipeline. And so far, from what we can tell, so far only about 16 of those have been programmed and have received PID numbers. So please don't put that off too much longer if you can get that done, because once it gets a PID number, it gets into the Ellis system and it gets going. And the last thing is The new projects that you received, most of you did want to take advantage of our PDIP program, where a project has to be programmed in 2 or 4 years. And then you might see that project actually sitting in a year that's further out, in 26, 25, or 26, or beyond. That's because of fiscal constraint. We kind of have to park that project somewhere. We don't want to have these huge deficits in like 24, 23, 24, 25. So we kind of park the project out there. And then when money becomes available, we'll start to pull them in. We have a project we're expecting to free up some money, be canceled and free up some money. Plus, statewide, there's some balances out there from other MPOs that we hope to take advantage of. So what we're going to do is just park these new projects in years that are further out, and then we'll pull them in as we can. And a lot of which ones we choose to pull in will probably be based on worst first, like those with the worst PCIs, and those that are ready will get moved up first. So with that, be glad to answer any questions.
All right, seeing no questions, we'll move on. Thank you, Mr. Pillay. Item 4, old business. A, public participation plan, final draft repeat, reference attachment 4A. Mr. Prater.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The public comment period for the draft 3P ends tomorrow, and there's been very little change to this item since our initial presentation to the committees back in January. The changes that have been made have been the result of several suggestions from the TAC during the January meeting. Those changes concern our maps and a table in Appendix G. With regards to the maps, these are the maps depicting the area's elderly, low-income, and minority populations. Suggestions were made that we do things to improve the legends for these maps, such as better use of color and also a citation of the source data. With regards to the table in Appendix G, this is our traditional methods table, which documents our outreach methods. A suggestion was made that we include some clarifying language regarding Title VI complaints that we've received and Title VI complaints that have been resolved. Those changes have been incorporated into the latest version of the draft 3P, which you have. This item will be presented again for comment tonight at our virtual Citizens Involvement Committee meeting, and that's just where things stand right now. Thank you. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Questions?
Thanks.
All right, this item requires a motion.
Hadley, move approval.
Pauling, second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor of approving, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the motion passes. Item 5, new business. Item 5A, traffic crashes and safety performance measures, reference attachment 5A. Ms. Prater and Mr. Poulet.
Hi. We just completed our 2018 to 2020 crash report. This presentation, we're going to focus on quite a few things, so Dave and I are going to split this up a little bit. First, we're going to talk about the safe systems approach, which is kind of a new methodology that came down from the state and the feds. And then we're going to also discuss trends. There's been less traffic, but there's actually been an increase in fatalities. Then we're going to discuss the high crash sections and intersections, bicycle and pedestrian safety, safety performance measures, and ODOT safety program. So safe approach, safe systems is a new approach that we're focusing on fatalities and injuries as opposed to just crashes in general. If you look at previous crash reports, this definitely is going to make a huge impact on the segments Some locations that have been crash locations in the past don't even show up on this report whatsoever. So basically, the main focus of this is just to shift from looking at all crashes of any type to focusing on just those that have injury and fatalities. Because if you have 20 crashes where they're just fender benders, that's not as important as if someone actually is hurt or, heaven forbid, killed. So, and also, this approach also focuses not just on vehicular crashes, but pedestrian crashes, bicycle crashes, things of that nature, because these usually are more extreme. So, Safe System acknowledges that people make mistakes and responsibility is shared. So in 2020, our VMT actually was down because probably of COVID, but our crashes also decreased. You know, it was on these two pages. Evidently, it's a different version of PowerPoint. We have a newer version of PowerPoint back at the office. So basically, we had two pages that had serious injury crashes and fatality crashes. Serious injury crashes stayed very similar, even though the volumes were much, much lower. We still had just about the same amount of serious injury crashes. However, fatalities went up quite a bit. They increased, fatal crashes increased from 21 to 25, even though our vehicle miles traveled dropped substantially. And this is not just an Ohio thing. This is not just a Northeast Ohio thing either. This is kind of a nationwide trend that's been happening. The fatalities went up even though we had a reduction in volume. So now we're going to look at how the crashes are analyzed. First, we get crash data from ODOT, and we plot it all in GIS. Unfortunately, a lot of the data that we get from ODOT has been manipulated. It doesn't match the actual crash report sometimes, or sometimes the crash report doesn't have latitude and longitude on it. So a lot of times we have to check these crashes individually and look them up. So this takes quite a bit of time to look up every single crash that doesn't seem to look right. If we pull a crash up and we look at it and it's not at the right intersection, or sometimes, for example, we have state routes that intersect each other multiple times. All the crashes may be placed at one intersection, but really they're at three other intersections. So we have to physically move all those crashes. And then we have to also decide whether they're intersection or they're segment related. We don't analyze freeway crashes. ODOT analyzes freeway crashes, so we don't analyze those. Typically for an intersection crash, it's within a 250-foot radius of the intersection. But then we also look at things like, is a vehicle leaving the intersection? If it's departing an intersection, that is not a intersection crash. That is a segment crash because they're not impacted by the intersection itself. Another thing is driveways that are very close to an intersection. Those are segment crashes as well. Things like people pulling out of the gas station on the corner. That's not an intersection crash. So, our criteria now is 3 crashes per mile per year for segments. And the new criteria is now not based on crash rate, but we actually have 30% of all the crashes have to be injury or fatality, which eliminates a lot of the previous segments. Intersections, it's a similar methodology. It's 3 crashes or 9 crashes in a 3-year period, which is 3 per year on average, and also the 30% crashes that involve injuries and fatalities. So the new criteria, as we said, no longer focuses on crash rate at all. We focus on severity. Then we come up with a composite score. We rank all the crashes by number of crashes and then percentage of injury and fatality. So, for example, if number of crashes is ranked 22nd and percentage of injury and fatality crashes is 11th, then our composite score would be 33. Then we sort all these composite scores and then rank them accordingly. So for highway sections, we have 160 highway sections that meet that minimum criteria that we discussed. And the number one section is in Akron on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and it is between Howe and North Broadway. And there are 202 intersection crashes on our new report, and the highest rated intersection crash is actually way out in Portage County, and it's Waterloo Road and Alliance Road out in Portage County. So we definitely want to look at this one, because all the segments that were on the previous ones, it's not going to be apples to oranges, or it's going to be like apples to oranges now. So, and as I said, ODOT does the freeway segments. You can look those up if you're interested on their website. They only list the top 50 rural and urban locations statewide, so there's not that many. And they analyze everything in 1/10 of a mile segments. They don't base it on any kind of logical termini. It's just basically like log points.
Okay, I'm going to resume the presentation with bicycle and pedestrian crashes. First of all, I do apologize for not having those graphs. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be missing some here also, and I think what happened was our office we have Office 365 now, and I'm pretty sure that those graphs are sitting out there on the cloud.
Yeah.
So if you're able to make it next week, we'll hopefully have all this fixed. I do apologize. A couple of things about bicycle and pedestrian crashes. They have a very high percentage of injuries, 73% and 82%. They're more random and spread out. It's hard to zero in on a location and say this is the intersection we want to fix. Maybe if you could do a corridor, possibly, but map 3 and 4 in the report show the location of the bike and pedestrian crashes. Many of these crashes involve younger people. Bike riders, pedestrians, and drivers may not be aware of rules that they need to follow, and in this category, often education is a very effective countermeasure. There's the first missing graph, so I'll just have to kind of tell you about it. The good news is, in 2020, bicycle crashes decreased by 22. They actually went down, and injuries decreased by 12. So in 2020, we had a decrease in bike crashes and injuries, and that kind of surprised me, because During the pandemic, when I watched the news, especially during the nice weather, it showed tons of people out riding bikes and out running and walking and such to get their exercise. So I was a little surprised that they went down like they did, but since traffic volumes went down, perhaps there was less conflict. I'm not sure, but I was very pleased to find that out. These are the months that most of the bicycle-related crashes happen. Obviously, they no big surprise. More people bike in the warm summer months between May and October. The one thing on this next slide, which, oh, it is, okay, we do have it. The next slide, I broke out the years. I broke out the years 18, 19, and 20. And typically, like I just said, bicycle crashes happen during the warm summer months. However, in 2020, usually August has the most crashes. Typically, if I go back through all the years, it'll either be July or August. And what's really odd about 2020 is, for some odd reason, we just didn't have that upswing in August. A little uptick in July, a little uptick in September, but for some odd reason, we didn't have that. So I wish I could figure out why this happened and then duplicate it in future years. But the only thing I can think of is maybe less traffic played into it. I'm just not sure. This is the graph that was supposed to show pedestrian trends. Once again, pedestrian crashes decreased by 53 in 2020, injuries down by 38, and fatalities by 6. So once again, good news. These are the months that pedestrian crashes happen. If I went back through all the years that I've since I've been doing this, for some odd reason, October is always has the most pedestrian crashes. And I went through, I looked at data, I've looked at lots and lots of data in October. The only thing I can figure out is here, especially recently, October has been a pretty nice month weather-wise, but it's the hours of daylight is much shorter. So I think what you have, and this has actually happened to me, is I would get home after work and I'd say I'd want to go out and go for a bike ride in October, but it gets dark on you quick. So many times, even when you leave, it's light, but then coming back, it's dark. So I think darkness plays into it and the nicer weather that we've been having. Now, once again, I took pedestrian crashes monthly, and I broke them into each year. And you can see 18 and 19 have the typical October peak. For some reason, 2020 didn't have that. So actually, in 2020, it kind of peaked in November. But I'm not sure why, but I wish we could duplicate that, because October is typically the worst month for pedestrian crashes, and I do believe it's partly due to more darkness. And then this is hourly, 2018 to 20, pedestrian crashes by hour. You have that little spike in the morning between 7 and 8. I think what contributes to that is people and children maybe going to school, walking to school. And then, of course, you have the afternoon spikes where people are out and active, walking around. Safety performance measures. Once again, this is a new requirement by the federal government for ODOT and MPOs. We have to keep track of our fatalities and our serious injuries and serious injuries per vehicle miles traveled, and also non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. So what we did, when this started, we took 5 years of data, 2011 to 2015, and did the average for all of these categories. And then what we do now is every year we take 5 years of data and compare it to the original 5 years. AMATS has supported the ODOT goal of trying to reduce all five of these categories by 2%. Unfortunately, this last report, we didn't do too well. Number of fatalities, the average number of fatalities were actually up 14%. And then fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled was actually up 22%, because we had a lot of fatalities but yet less traffic. Number of serious injuries are down 49%, and serious injuries per vehicle miles traveled is down 42%, and then number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries are down 21%. Last thing I want to touch on is the ODOT safety programs. I know that you guys are used to the safety HSIP safety program as it has been, but there's going to be a few changes. Once again, like Amy said, they're going to this new safe system approach methodology, and what you're going to focus on is serious injuries and deaths, fatalities and serious injuries. Now there's going to be three main ODOT safety programs: abbreviated, formal, and systematic. The abbreviated is designed for quick improvements. This will be a simplified program, a simplified application, usually under $250,000, constructed within 2 years, funding for construction only, and location has to have at least three trashes a year. They'll accept applications for these four times a year: December 31st, March 31st, June 30th, and September 30th. Now, I would like to warn you that I think ODOT is still somewhat fine-tuning their safety program, so any information or dates that I give you are subject to change, but this was the latest information that I could find on the website. The next one is the formal safety program. This is the one that you're probably used to applying to. The only difference will be, as Amy alluded to, has to have nine crashes, and of all the crashes, 30% of those have to have a fatality or injury. Project with higher severity gets more points. ODOT will set their target amounts as they receive their money for it. And the one thing that's changing a little bit is communities with fewer financial resources and higher levels of poverty will get some additional points toward the score. And the deadline this year for these applications is August 31st of 22. And then the last one is the systematic safety program. This program is going to focus on pedestrian and roadway departure crashes. And you can request up to $2 million for a pedestrian-related improvement, $5 million for a roadway departure improvement, 10% local match, and once again, low income or those communities that are in financial need have, I think they'll have a little bit of an advantage. And then these are not scored. The applicants are reviewed by a committee, and then they'll more or less just choose the ones they feel are most appropriate. Unfortunately, these were due in January of 22, but as you know, if things stay on schedule, I'm sure they'll receive these applications again in January of 23. And last but not least, if you do have a location that you think you want to pursue safety money for, you know, you could let me know or Amy, and, you know, we'd be glad to kind of maybe help you through the process the best we can. Or you could call Dave Griffith from District 4. He's the safety man at District 4, and he can help you through the whole process. But the big change this year is the criteria. The criteria's changed a little bit. So they're going to focus more on serious injuries and fatalities and areas that have a lot of those. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take those.
You know, Dave, I just might submit on context of 2020, especially on those pedestrian and bike numbers, is that I know for sure, you know, a number of school districts were remote going into the August, into the 2020-2021 school year, which I would assume, or hybrid. So I would assume most likely that we would see those numbers go back. Because I know, like, Akron, being a large school district, was remote in August of 2020, and some schools pushed their start dates back as well in September. So it's like all our data from 2020, you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I think that it was so different.
Yeah, 2020 is just was just a different year in almost every aspect, including safety. Everybody is just kind of puzzled by the spike in fatalities. I'm not sure how 21 has done. I have heard that 21 was not too much better, but nobody is quite sure why that happened. Some people think it's more speeding, less traffic, more speeding. Sometimes congestion might be a kind of a deterrent to speeding. Nobody's quite sure. Everyone's kind of baffled by why the spike in fatalities, although there was less traffic. So we'll just have to watch and see what happens. And I do agree with Curtis. As life gets back to normal, if it ever does, this probably will also. And as kids begin walking to school and going to school again, you know, things might, unfortunately, things might go back up a little bit. Yes?
Dave, well, my answer to your first question is I wondered if there was a lack of law enforcement as a deterrent, maybe because of funds availability or just officer availability because of COVID. So that was my
thought. That's a good point. I was somewhere, and I think I heard that in 2020, the Ohio State Patrol issued more over 100 mile per hour tickets than they ever have in the past. So, but that's also a good point. Everybody had staffing shortages. People were either out sick or whatever, and that's a good point. It could have very well been less officers on the street.
My main question though was, this morning I was half listening to the news, and I thought that I had heard there was some study done that found that there were more accidents involving SUVs and I think trucks than passenger cars. And I'm wondering if in your analysis, well, not in AMATS because you would have said it if you had done it, but if there is analysis on the type of vehicle that's done, so that the idea, I guess, is that, or possibly that, you know, yes, SUVs and your pickup trucks, you're up higher, but maybe you're not seeing the pedestrian right next to you sort of thing. You know, we all like the big look ahead that we get from SUVs, for example.
It's interesting you brought that up because we have in our data the type of vehicle it is. I just normally don't present it because I never thought it had much value as far as as far as related to like improvements. I think statistically there's actually more trucks and SUVs on the roads now than ever before. But also, something I heard I thought was interesting was when a car hits a pedestrian, they hit them low, and many times the pedestrian, like, flips up over the hood, which still is not good, but it kind of provides a place for them to go. When a big pickup or SUV hits a pedestrian, unfortunately, that doesn't happen. There's like nowhere for them to go. I mean, it could, but it just like doesn't happen when a low profile vehicle hits a pedestrian. They just sort of get. I'm not sure. Well, they don't have a place to really go.
And Dave, I actually at one point did pull out 2019 and looked at our pedestrian deaths by vehicle, and. Because I've read about this trend since before that article, and when I looked at it, the regular sedan was guilty more often than the SUV. But that, you know, we have such a small sample size in our area, I wouldn't want to extrapolate from
right.
that. But, you know, if you're looking at 9 pedestrian deaths, and, you know, 4 of them were sedans, 1 was a minivan, 2 were a truck, and the others were, like, semi, or, you know, whatever they were... I feel like we really don't have enough data to say it would be better to look at it at the national trend than locally, I think.
The big thing, at least, this is just my personal experience with pedestrian and bike crashes, especially pedestrian crashes, is that when it's dark, you just can't see them. I mean, people just tend to wear, especially in colder, in colder months, people just tend to wear dark clothing. I mean, I don't go out with a bright orange coat on. My coats, my jackets are dark colors, and jeans or sweats, whatever, and it's just so hot. It's so hard to see them when it's dark out. Even if there's street lighting, it's just so hard to see pedestrians sometimes. And if it's raining, then it's really hard. So, we'll just have to watch these trends and see what happens. Like I said, I wish I could somehow reproduce what's happening so they stay down, but I think as time goes on, they'll probably inch back up again. We'll just have to see.
That's scary.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one comment on the plan, because I think we have a motion to approve it. Coming up is that if you just recheck some of your map figures for your plot points.
Okay.
Because I noticed on the high crash intersections there's 2, but I couldn't find 2 in Twinsburg, but I can only find 1 on the list. So I don't know it.
No, we only mapped the top 50.
Right, and I only
saw
1 on your list, but I see 2 points. And I use the map more often, and I think the public uses the map more often.
Okay.
I prefer to remove one that doesn't exist.
I would eventually like to put a map on our website that shows all the crashes, all the locations. And then a little more detail on, with each location. So, but I will check into that. Thank you. Okay, any other comments?
Does, like, your pedestrian crashes and your bicycle crashes, do they take distracted driving into consideration as a possible?
Okay, there actually is a place where the reporting officer is supposed to mark if he thinks it was related to distracted driving. My only thought is, how in the world would he know that? I mean, I don't think too many people are going to say, "Oh, officer, I was texting, so that's why this happened." Determine that they do mark it, but it's a relatively new thing on the crash reports. But they do have a box they can check if they feel it's related to distracted driving, not just for pedestrians but for all crashes. It's just a tough thing for an officer to determine sometime, unless maybe someone else in the car tells them or something. Or the driver actually confesses. Yes.
Quick question. Do we know what the percentage of trucks and SUVs on the road are compared to just sedans? Is it 3 times as many trucks and SUVs? 4 times?
I'm sure that number's out there. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure the BMB would have that.
Yeah.
But I don't know it offhand. But yeah. Maybe I can try to find it.
But to beg into what you were saying, if you've got that many more trucks and SUVs hitting people, then you're going to have a difference in your fatality.
Yes. Yes, you have. You know, this issue also is. You have just such a wide range of vehicles on the road now, and this also comes into play with guardrail height. Like guardrail height now is kind of hard to determine because you know, if it's too low, you flip right over it, but if it's too high, then it goes into the car, so the car goes under it. So it really is something that you know, safety engineers have to grapple with. Any other questions? Okay.
All right.
I don't believe this needed.
It does. No, we need a motion. Yeah, we want a motion.
We want a motion. Okay,
yeah, that's right. So thank you, Dave and Amy. With that, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second. Cleary.
All right. If we have a motion, a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Hearing none, the motion has passed. Moving on to item 5B, 2020 update of the AMAX area federal functional classification of highways. Amy.
Hopefully I didn't lose any of my cracks in this one. Can't make any promises, but this one's pretty short and sweet. So we're going to talk about the federal functional classification of highways. So what is federal functional classification? It's a grouping of roadways based on the relative importance and function of the roadway. The functional classes are divided into urban and rural categories, and they will be based on the 2020 census data, which we currently do not have. Putting that up there. Functional class is determined basically by accessibility and mobility. So the more mobility you have, the less accessibility you have. So like your freeweys, there's plenty of mobility, but you have very limited access. All the way down to your local streets, which you can't go very fast, but you can get to a lot of different points. So that's basically the spectrum we're looking at. So the 2013 federal standard is what we use for functional class guidelines. And these are the percentages of guidelines, or these are the percentages for our current functional class designations. So the top table is the percentage guidelines, and the bottom table is our actual current 2018, because we've updated it to match some of ODOT's suggestions. But as you can see, we definitely have more interstates than the state average. That cannot be helped in any way. They are what they are. There are interstates. We have a pretty high concentration of interstates in our service area, so we can't really do much about that. To kind of counteract that, we try not to get too high into the arterial categories. We try to stay a little bit more towards the bottom of the range whenever possible. So, okay, so the staff is currently asking for possible changes within your communities to be submitted, and we want those submitted by May 27th, so we're giving you a little while to analyze and decide upon this. Once the 2020 draft functional classes are received from ODOT, after they base it on the 2020 census data, the staff will review possible changes and present recommendations to the TAP TIP subcommittee. I just want to remind you that minor collectors and local roads are not eligible for federal funds. So although we do designate minor collectors, those are not eligible for federal funds at this time. Please note that if you ask for a whole bunch of additions, we may ask that you possibly relinquish some of your mileage in other locations. We don't have unlimited mileage. So, I mean, if you have something you want to kind of swap out, or if you have a lot more mileage in your service area, you can probably add some mileage, but we don't have unlimited mileage. Questions? Told you it was short.
All right. Thank you, Amy. Moving on to item six, resolutions. Our first item, 6A, is resolution 2022-05, approving amendment 15 to the fiscal year 2021-2024 transportation improvement program, to convert a two-way stop-controlled intersection into a single-lane roundabout. Reference attachment 6A, Mr. Boulet.
Hey, thank you. This is resolution 2022-05R. Just yesterday, we had a request to add an item to this, and I'm hoping that everyone received a copy of the revised one when we came in. But this is an amendment to add right-of-way phase. The project that was just added yesterday was a major widening project on I-77 in Richfield and Richfield Township. And the amendment is to add money for a right-of-way phase that is being added in fiscal year 22 using $51,200 of federal funds and $12,800 of state funds. And then the other project was the original project on this amendment, which is converting a two-way stop-controlled intersection in Wayne County. It's actually on the border of Milton Township and Chippewa Township, at State Route 57 and State Route 604. And this project is being added, engineering phase is being added using HSIP, Highway Safety Improvement Funds. And engineering is scheduled to begin in fiscal year 23. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
See no questions. I do show that we need a motion to approve.
I make that motion to Sheila Rittman.
Second.
All in second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Hearing none, the motion passes. Moving on to resolution item 6B, resolution 2022-06, to aid Ohio EPA awarded DERG funds for Metro and PARTA, fiscal year 2021-2024. TIP Amendment Number 16, Attachment 6B.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your packet, you sign this resolution, which adds recently awarded funds to Metro and PARTA for fiscal years 2023 and 2024. The state is awarding these funds through its Diesel Emissions Reduction Grant Program, as described in Attachment 6B. The funds are derived from the Federal Highway Administration CMAQ program. Funds are granted outside of the standard MPO statewide CMAQ program and constitute additional funds for the area. PARTA is being awarded $1.1 million in federal funds for the purchase of three large CNG buses programmed in fiscal year 2024. The total cost is nearly $1.6 million. Metro is being awarded $855,000 in federal funds for the purchase of two large CNG buses programmed in 2023. Total cost is around $1.1 million. PARTA is also requesting to amend their planning and preventive maintenance projects in 2023 and 2024 using additional funds from their agency balance of available federal funds. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2022-06. Are there any questions?
Seeing no questions, I'll request a motion to approve resolution 2022-06.
So moved, McCleary.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign.
No.
The motion passes. Item 7, any other business? All right, moving on to adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Following.
Yes, quickly. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.